paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
Also in town this weekend and tonight, via the Gene Siskel Film Center, a movie about Dick Cavett and Muhammad Ali. The filmmaker is an archivist and a sometimes documentary filmmaker named Robert Bader. And he's sitting right next to me. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yes, I've been on here before.
With Nick DiGilio.
Yeah, I had a book about the Marx Brothers that Nick did a piece on with me a couple of years ago.
Well, okay, let's just start there for a second. What should I know or remember about the Marx Brothers?
Well, the book was about their early days in vaudeville, which hadn't really been covered anywhere else. So that was my mission to do that book because I wanted to discuss the stuff that nobody knew about. So it's a book about the Marx Brothers with mostly stuff you didn't know.
Do they hold up, the Marx Brothers?
Oh, I think so. I think there's something about them that's timeless. Other comedy teams from those days are kind of forgotten, but Duck Soup works for every generation because there are always going to be people who want to make fun of war.
I don't remember. Was that it? Was that their niche?
I think Duck Soup was, yeah.
Make fun of war?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, Duck Soup is about these two fictional countries that go to war over the president insulting the president. And it just is made to be so silly.
Well, how would that resonate today? Nothing like that.
Nothing at all. It resonated in the 60s during the Vietnam War, and the Marx Brothers had a huge comeback.
Oh, no kidding. You know, it's funny, though, because every now and then, I don't remember the last time I watched a Marx Brothers film all the way through. I don't know that I, in fact, ever have. But I'll say this, whenever I do find Marx Brothers clips one way or another, I do think Groucho and the gang are very funny. I think he was a good actor, a good comedic actor.
Yeah, they actually had something unique. They were four very different guys when they were the four Marx Brothers, and they worked on stage together for 25 years before they even made movies.
Got it.
And they just had something very different than the others, and they just still seem really funny. Their lesser movies are still great.
All right, let's not dwell on this. What's the name of that movie, though?
Which one, the Marx Brothers movie or my movie?
Your movie.
Ali and Cavett, The Tale of the Tapes.
No, the one you did about the Marx Brothers.
Oh, no, your book about the Marx Brothers. That's Four of the Three Musketeers, the Marx Brothers on stage. Don't try to confuse me.
That just sounded like a Marx Brothers routine, just so you guys know.
We'll edit this out. It'll never hit the airwaves.
We'll fix it later.
So then tell me why you then, boy, there's a range, so you like that, but you also, and by the way, this is what, the 50th anniversary of the Dick Cavett Show, right?
Yeah, Dick went on for ABC on his daytime show 50 years ago. It was the spring of 1968. The very first guest on the very first show he taped was Muhammad Ali.
So now you've done a documentary film about that, and again, the title of that movie is
Ali and Cavett, The Tale of the Tapes.
I'll give away a pair of tickets to that screening tonight. It's sold out for the Saturday showing, and I believe it may be sold out for tonight. Why was this of interest to you?
Well, I've been working with Dick Cavett's archive for a number of years, and there was always this idea in my head that we could do documentaries based on the stuff in the archive and not have to go too far afield to get other material. And a few years ago, I was the executive producer of two documentaries on PBS, one about the Watergate scandal and one about the Vietnam War, dwelling mostly on the Dick Cavett stuff. So the Ali thing just kind of loomed large in the archive. He was on 14 times, and it was all through that really important decade of his career where he was stripped of his title, refused induction into the Army, had his comeback against Frazier, and then as he stayed in the ring too long and started to deteriorate as a fighter and started to be impaired from blows to the head, and sort of that key component in Ali's story was discussed at every phase on the Cavett Show, and yeah, he was personally friendly with Cavett.
Is this a movie then about Dick Cavett or Muhammad Ali?
Well, it's sort of both, but the way I like to describe it is it's Ali's story through the prism of his interviews and his friendship with Dick Cavett.
When I think of Ali being friendly with the media, I think of Howard Cosell.
Yeah, I don't think Ali ever spent the night at Howard Cosell's house, though. They were really good friends. Cosell was very good to Ali. He was one of the first media people to take Ali's side and defend his position and his right to be a conscientious objector.
Cosell was a type A, bombastic character and caricature, and you think he knew that. You sort of feel the same way about Ali. You don't feel that way about Dick Cavett, though. Cavett was more reserved, right?
Yeah, I think Cosell saw in Ali a great way to promote himself. And I think it was a little different for Dick. And, you know, Dick likes to make the comment, and since he's not here, I'll steal his line. of course, you know, our friends. We came from such similar backgrounds.
DeKevin was just in town, though. He's 80-some years old.
He's 81. Right? He'll be 82 in November. He actually is flying home as we do this. He was at the screening last night at the Cisco Center. It was great. We had a real good time there last night.
I wonder if there came a moment when, early on in their relationship, they realized they had something here, the two of them.
You know, as it's shown in the film, they met when Cavett was a writer on the Jerry Lewis Show in 1963, and Cassius Clay came on before his fight with Sonny Liston. So they met in 1963 and didn't have very much contact until Cavett got a show 5 years later. But once Ali was on the Cavett Show and realized it was a place where he was given freedom to say what he wanted to say, as opposed to some other network shows where they wouldn't allow it, it was a place he kept returning to.
What was he saying that the other shows wouldn't?
Well, there's some great stuff in the film where he talks about the corrupt Vietnam War and how America is spending so much money to free people when they can't even free black people in the United States.
Nobody was saying that at the time?
Well, no, plenty of people were saying it at the time, but very few of them were saying it on network television, on talk shows that were supposed to be entertainment shows.
So props to, I guess, DeKevin or maybe ABC?
ABC gave him a lot of hell for it. But he did manage to control the content of the show. In fact, that first show that they taped, after it was over, Cavett was so happy that it went so well with Ali, and he had also Gore Vidal on that show, and he went out to the ABC executive in the wings after the taping, thinking he was going to get congratulated, and the guy said, "Nobody gives a damn what Muhammad Ali and Gore Vidal think of the war. We'll air that show tomorrow. We'll air a different one as the first show." And that's what they did.
They didn't run that
they
first
interview. They didn't run it as the premiere. They ran it the next day because they didn't want it to be the debut of the Dick Cavett Show.
Might have been the death of it out of the gate.
No, well, just the opposite. Apparently the reviews were the first show was okay, but he really hit his stride the second day.
Isn't that funny? So it wasn't that anybody was saying that. Muhammad Ali was saying it. He wasn't alone.
Sure.
But it was that Dick Cavett was going to tweeze that conversation out and make it presentable on ABC.
Well, to put it in perspective, Ali could probably get a shot to go on a show anytime he wanted to and say what he wanted to. He went on the David Susskind show, and David Susskind was not exactly nice to him and suggested he was a draft dodger, and he never went back. But he went on the Cavett Show over and over again.
Cavett didn't push him that way?
No, he challenged him, but he challenged him intelligently, and they discussed it, and it was a conversation rather than an attack.
Yeah. Is there anybody, you know, in the New York Times over the weekend, there was an interview or a feature story about Dick Cavett. They called him, as I said a moment ago, the thinking man's Johnny Carson. And I wonder, in that article, they say he constantly gets asked, who's the Johnny Carson out there today? Is it Jimmy Kimmel? Is it Conan O'Brien? Was it David Letterman? What's your answer to that?
Well, through the fault of no one who's doing these shows today, the landscape is so different. There's no show now that's going to have somebody come on and do an in-depth interview for 90 minutes. And
is that what it was?
Well, sometimes,
minutes?
Yes. Dick's late-night show was 90 minutes, and very often he'd have one guest. Many nights he'd have three or four, but there were occasions where he'd have one guest. Sometimes he'd have, on his PBS show, which was a half an hour, he'd go as many as four half hours with the same guest.
How about Bill Maher?
You know, I don't actually watch it, but
Jon Stewart.
I don't watch that one either. Don't hold that against me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a big watcher of these things. I used to watch Letterman, and I think my days as a late-night talk show viewer sort of ended when Letterman went off.
Well, for Maher, I'll just tell you what I know about him, and I'm not a regular watcher of these shows either, but he's intellectual, he's interested in hearing people out, but he's also interested in combat and comedy. And Maher's signature, I think, is outlandishness. And Stewart was obviously very, very funny when he was on, but he had context to what he was saying, but none of them sat back and but those were comedy shows. They are funny shows, even if you didn't like what they said. Sometimes was Dick Cavett's show funny that way?
Well, you know, it could be very funny. He didn't do sketches. I mean, early
he didn't come out and do a monologue,
He did a monologue, but you know, in his early days on the morning show, they'd occasionally do a comedy sketch, but that didn't seem to really resonate for his audience, so they kind of wiped it out pretty quickly. But the show could be riotously funny, and sometimes when it wasn't supposed to be, there could be some really great interplay. One of the things I love most about the Dick Cavett Show is the mixture of guests. There's a wonderful show, for example, just rattle one off the top of my head, Satchel Paige, Salvador Dali, and Lillian Gish. Together again, folks. You know, but that mixture is great. There's a wonderful show with Groucho and Truman Capote.
Yeah.
You know, just to see those people interact was just so unusual.
Wonder if that would work today.
I hope it would. But yeah. I don't know.
In our studio, we're talking a little bit about a movie about Muhammad Ali told through the prism of his interviews with Dick Cavett, and it's showing at the Siskel Film Center tonight.
Tonight,
right?
Yes.
In our studio is Robert Bader. We'll pick it up here in a minute on WGN. We're talking about Dick Cavett and Muhammad Ali with Robert Bader. He's in our studio, and I wanted to give away a pair of tickets. You said you got maybe a pair?
Yeah, we can give away a pair for tonight's screening.
Okay, and so as soon as, you know, let's wait a couple of minutes. I'll tell you when to call. Griff will clear the lines for the White Sox tickets, but if you are at the able to come downtown tonight, at when are you showing at 7 o'clock?
8 o'clock, actually.
8 o'clock this evening. Are you going to give a talk before or after?
I'm going to be doing a Q&A afterwards, and there's probably a little short introduction. There was last night, so if they run the same program, yes.
What do people ask most about when they talk to you about Muhammad Ali?
Well, the question I get most about when we see the film today is Ali's stand against the Vietnam War. People seem to see a connection to NFL players taking a knee for the national anthem. There's a lot of that, and I hadn't thought of that when I was making it, to be perfectly honest.
No kidding.
But a lot of people ask about that, and I do point out that when Ali did what he did, it was a much riskier thing to do. He didn't have a players' union or anything behind him. He lost everything.
He's self-employed.
Yeah, they took away his title. They took away his license. He couldn't do his job. And I think today it's a little bit more of a protected situation for a professional athlete. And Ali was very brave to do what he did.
Why did he do that?
Well, there's a lot of thought about that, and there are a couple of different perspectives in the movie. He was a member of the Nation of Islam, which was a quite controversial organization at the time, and their policy was not to fight in a war to free people while black people weren't free in this country. And Ali adopted that as a conscientious objector. He kind of messed up his court case as a conscientious objector by saying he would fight in a war to free black people tomorrow, except a conscientious objector has to object to all wars. So it was a complicated time. It was a complicated case, and we do examine that in the film.
Did he go to jail then, or what happened to him as a result?
He was found guilty, but he did not ever go to jail. The Supreme Court did a complicated thing. They overturned their initial decision, and then they kind of vacated their position on it because he had become too old to qualify for the draft while they were deciding it. People don't really think about it that he was more than 26 years old once they decided, so he's
grandfathered out.
No longer eligible for the draft, yeah.
Lucky for him. How did he repair his image then?
You know, that's one of the miraculous things I see in Ali, because it was a very polarizing time, and his position as a member of the Nation of Islam certainly made him a lot of enemies. And he became such a beloved figure, and he never really renounced the Nation of Islam because he had so much respect for Elijah Muhammad, who was a real mentor to him, as was Malcolm X. And when Malcolm X and the Nation of Islam split, he remained loyal to Elijah Muhammad, but he never would say anything bad about Elijah Muhammad. He just backed off the rhetoric a little bit when he got his license back, and Elijah Muhammad censured him and banished him from the Nation of Islam for a year. And Ali continued to believe in Islam. He was a religious man, and he kind of moved over to the conventional version of Islam, and he waited until Elijah Muhammad died in 1975. Ali was one of his pallbearers, and he never really renounced him in any kind of a negative way, because he did respect him quite a bit for how he helped him and what he did for black people in this country who really found an identity there.
The conversation today is complicated because, however, people feel about black athletes taking a knee or not taking a knee, so say between the audience and the athletes, you would have that with America and the athlete Muhammad Ali, but you also have the complication today that the president has sort of inserted himself in that dialogue and divided LeBron James and the rest of us. Did Nixon get involved in the Ali story?
Well, actually, when Ali refused induction, Johnson was still president, and he did not comment on it, at least as far as I know, and I think I would have found it if he did. And Nixon stayed out of it. The Supreme Court was involved in it. But I think there's a fundamental difference in the time because of what was going on in the country. It's not quite the same. I know a lot of people want to say it's the same. It's just not quite the same. There were those newsreels that you can never forget of black people being hit with fire hoses and having dogs put on them, and that was being seen on the 6 o'clock news when Ali made his stand. Maybe things have gotten better. Maybe things have stayed the same in some ways, but Ali was up against a hell of a lot more than people are up against today with this kind of thing.
Okay, and the title of the film is
Ali and Cavett, The Tale of the Tapes.
14 different interviews.
Yeah, we don't use every one of them, but there's a lot of footage of Dick and Muhammad Ali in the film.
It's a 90-minute movie, so it's at the Siskel Film Center tonight. I've got a couple of tickets for the 8 o'clock screening, and if you want to go, it's otherwise, I believe, sold out. We'll put them and we'll call in your name. Call 312-591-7200, 312-591-7200. And Griff, let's take the 10th caller, and we'll leave them in the name of that. I said 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Thank you for that. And Robert, nice to meet you.
Well, thank you. It was a great pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I'll tell Nick DiGilio you said
hi,
too.
Yeah, tell him I said hi.
He'll be on this station late night. It's 1:58, and the news is next on WGN.